Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
All due respect. And remember, I'm saying with all due respect.
Here with Nick Wilson.
I am America's sports talk show host. Hear me roar.
Stan Norfleet here.
Hey, it was just a misunderstanding.
No, it ain't.
Oh, bleep you. Get off my...
Bye, Gomez.
Bye, Gomez, right. To both of you.
Do I detect some kind of sarcasm here?
Never.
Sports Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. Welcome in to the noon hour. Hope y'all's lunch doing well. It's a Panther Monday.
What are we talking about this hour?
Sports.
I just noticed that.
It was blank.
You see that?
We got Fox this morning.
There was no topic tree.
I got, you're right. You can't get hammered on not being on the topic tree if there is no topic to be treed from.
Clearly, you didn't watch the tape.
Bill Bender, Sporting News national writer. He's going to join us in about 20 minutes. We'll talk about the weekend in college football.
What is this?
It was every bit what we wanted it to be from a chaos side of things. And so it just wasn't all the chaos that we thought it would be. That's coming up in 20 minutes. We've got the rundown coming up in 40 minutes as well. But Stan Norfleet, the homecoming came and went. And let's actually start, because we've not really talked about the vibe. The stadium was lit up yesterday.
Stadium was nice, yeah.
I can tell you guys, watching Cam zoom out of the tunnel
for the pre warm-up.
For the pre warm-up. Mm-hmm. That's just special. Like, I think this is one of the things when we started the show, I said that I'm focused more on what I saw from the offensive side of the ball, because I think that as the beginning point for this offense, I think you can start to win games. I think the defense can have better bounce back games. But a lot of that was the homecoming. Was everything I wanted it to be, but a win. Every other thing I wanted. We got the cool moments from Cam. We got a couple big plays. That Christian McCaffrey pass for the touchdown was one of the prettiest passes I've seen from Cam.
I agree with that. That was one of his better throws in his career.
In a long time.
Yeah.
And so I was very content just seeing a quarterback I trusted on the field play well, and to see the fans engaged again. I can't get over how good it felt and how good it sounded yesterday with the homecoming.
So all that I did to build up the homecoming, and I walked in the stadium as the national anthem was being sang. So I missed Cam being introduced. By the way, CMPD, God bless you. I know you're efforting to do what you can and getting people in, the ingress and egress of...
You're just coming for everybody today.
I just... CMPD
too.
What are we doing here? Like, the light is green. I need the officers, the good officers that protect us. I need them to motion for people to come forward. When the light is green and we're still standing still, I don't understand. So it took me a minute.
And that was Stan Norfleet that said that. Nick Wilson did not have a problem with the egress and ingress.
I love our fine officers. And the officers would tell me, bleep you. The officers would issue me a bigoma.
Stan, please do.
Get your bleep to the stadium sooner where you don't have to worry about the ingress. So that was one. So I had to go look at the footage. And John Ellis, I saw Will Kunkel, who joined us earlier in the show. I saw a lot of people put the Cam being introduced, and Cam soaked it up, and he deserved that.
Mm-hmm.
Cam deserved this moment. What I am mad at Cam about, and we haven't discussed this yet, can we just agree? And that's my boy. That was a bit much. The touchdown celebration, the first one, running out to the Panther face, slamming the ball down,
Nope. Doing
the whole look at. You just said it's not about me versus Ron and Washington. It's about us versus the Washington football team. And then your first touchdown on the opening series, you sprint out the midfield and you do that. Then he comes off the field and peruses the sideline, still engaging the fan base. away from his teammates about me. It was not a good look.
Can I tell you? I didn't care. Like, this wasn't LeBron, Cleveland, this is for you, where it was clearly for Nike. No, this was about Cam. I'm okay with that being about Cam Newton. No. Yes, 100%.
It was a lack of awareness.
A lack of awareness of what?
You can't make it about you in that moment.
Was it the home Rivera-ing? Was it the home Heineke-ing?
The hernie-ing?
Was it the home hernie-ing? Was it the home meatballing? No, it was the home camming. And on the very first drive, I had no problem with it. If he had continued to do that, if every time they scored, he had run out to the 50-yard line and put the ball down, maybe I could agree with you. But I was just so happy that he looked like an NFL quarterback. And I realize how far things have fallen. That I got so used to just having my will destroyed by watching Sam Darnold. Interception. Interception.
Consecutive.
I mean, good God.
Did Sam throw three interceptions? What was that game was that? Oh, New England.
Pick one.
He threw literally three picks in a row. That's what we were accustomed to watching.
And the Sam Darnold Dallas game. Like, I got so used to every time they got on offense of just feeling like, all right, let's see how they can bleep it up now. That I was just thankful. Like, I understand, and listen, you're not in and of yourself here. There are plenty of people who said, oh, Cam didn't have to do that. I think any of the people, and Amberella, who was wearing the Cam hat yesterday, mm-hmm. all the people from the Roaring Riot, I think they would agree. That moment was for them. No. Was it about Cam? Yes. But it was for them, for the people who have put up with the crap this organization has put them through for the last 2 years.
He can't do that. I'm not saying the man can't celebrate. I'm not saying the man can't do his thing and get his recognition.
Why?
Can we agree that he went extra? It was over the top.
Yes, but sometimes extra is okay.
No, in that moment, extra is not okay. Yes,
that's the one time extra is okay.
No, it's not.
Oh, my gosh. Listen, we're talking about the home camming. And what I thought was interesting is Matt Rhule did, especially given the two-minute drill, the fact that Cam was not fully ingratiated in the offense, Matt Rhule talked about The initial plan was to play P.J. Walker. Here's what Coach Rhule had to say. We're going to get to that in just a moment here.
It'd be the fit is making it about him right now.
It was. This is basically him putting the ball at the 50-yard line. Here's what Coach Rhule had to say about the shared plan at quarterback for yesterday.
We planned on playing PJ going in, but seemed like Cam was in control. You know, I mean, it seemed like he was moving the football. I think the coaches just decided, like, hey, he's hot. We only had one drive in the third quarter, I believe. Is that correct? One drive in the third quarter, because you know they did a nice job. They had such long drives that that part of it didn't quite go the way we wanted. You know, in terms of getting off the field on defense, we thought Cam was playing well, so we kept him in there.
Understatement of the year, by the way. That part didn't go the way we planned it. Only being able to drive the ball, or only be able to have one drive in the second or in the third quarter. I heard Will Kunkel say it, and I've heard other people say it, that maybe the Panthers should have put in P.J. Walker on the final drive because you're in the two-minute drill. I understand why anybody thinks that. I cannot imagine the vibe today. If you had put P.J. Walker into that game and the same result happens, for the homecoming, for the most important, you've got the face of the franchise, all the Dundada of Charlotte sports.
Oh, there's only one Dundada.
And yeah, his name's Cam Newton.
No, his name's Stan.
And put it, you've rode the hot hand all game long. And then the final 2 minutes, the two-minute drill, you put Philip Walker in. I think there would have been riots. I think people would have fist fought at the stadium had pulled Cam Newton in that moment for P.J. Walker.
I said this in real time. And there were people that questioned the series before the final series. Should Matt Rhule have gone forward on what was that, 4th and 2? I thought he should have. Now, Christian McCaffrey on that final drive. Oh, I'm sorry, on the second to last drive. See, Matt. You can't pull up short of the sticks. That was an error. He made a mistake. Fine. But I'm going down in that final drive. I'm going down with Cam Newton, a former MVP with Christian McCaffrey behind him. I'm trusting that Cam is going to make a play. And he happened to get sacked. It was the, what, maybe the second time all day. How many times was Cam sacked? Cam was sacked once. He got sacked literally the final play. I wasn't mad at that. Under no circumstance was I going with Philip Walker.
And I don't know why. If PJ,
given how the game played out,
Well, and if PJ had played earlier,
that's another thing yes.
that maybe I feel differently about. Here's the other thing. If I think PJ's been pretty good in between the sticks. He's been okay to that next level, but where he's really struggled, where people wanted to see the Panthers open it up, was down the field. Well, quite frankly, that's something that PJ has been incredibly inconsistent in his entire time in the NFL. So I don't feel like putting PJ in there to lob bombs is any more conducive to winning that game than Cam Newton, who maybe knows a play of the two-minute drill. There are still ways that you could have also utilized different plays in that scenario. And again, I think if you are going to lose, you are going to lose with Cam Newton. I don't think you were winning with PJ Walker in that scenario. I don't think it would have been fair to PJ to put him in there.
Oh, yeah, it would have been fair to PJ. He's been the backup all year. You have to prepare for that moment. So had Rule elected to sprinkle PJ in, which I anticipated he would do incorrectly, then I would have understood that. But Cam did push the ball down the field. You have to pick and choose your spots. The throw to McCaffrey, we talked about that, the touchdown. Tommy Tremble. Remember he had the levels throw? He had Tommy Tremble in the intermediate game, and he had DJ Moore deep. The old Cam would have forced it to DJ Moore deep. Mm-hmm. He took Tommy Tremble. It was a first down. The one that they had, the one that they reviewed. What was that? That pass was 19 yards. Okay. I'll take that. Another thing that jumped out to me, and we haven't said this either, 10 carries for McCaffrey, 10 runs for Cam, 1 run for Amir Abdullah, and Chuba Hubbard didn't get a single carry?
I buy Matt Rule's excuse. I said this earlier. Matt Rule's excuse from 4 weeks ago, I think it was, after they said we got to run the ball more, and then they went out and they didn't run the ball more. This was right before the we're going to run the ball more speech. Yeah. And he said we weren't on the field enough. I actually buy that.
That's crap.
They had one drive. They had one drive in the third quarter. So Washington was running the ball even in the first quarter. You had 3 plays. Punt. 3 and out. The next one, and that was after the fumble by Washington. Even after the Washington touchdown, you had a 5 and out. So I do buy some.
You can't run the ball on those 5 plays though.
They did run the ball.
I'm saying you can run the ball like with multiple personnel.
704-570-9610. We are talking about the homecoming. We're going to spin that forward here coming up in about 40 minutes. But the question for you guys is, what is the story of Cam's return to Carolina? Is this about how well he played? Is it about some of the other struggles from the Carolina Panthers offense? Or is this that Ron Rivera spoiled the homecoming by beating Cam and the Panthers at Bank of America Stadium? And Bill Bender of the Sporting News unpacks the chaos in college football. That's next on Sports Radio, FNC. Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. Happy Panther Monday. We got the rundown coming up in 20 minutes, but something left unsaid because I had to eat my Demon Deacon energy earlier today. I had to have it deflated on air. Was the absolute crazy weekend in college football. Oregon, sit your bleep down. All right. Michigan State, here's a big fat L. All right. By the way, good job out of Oklahoma State, now moving to 10-1. Wake Forest, here's an L. There were a lot of losses handed out, a lot of interesting games around college football to go ahead and talk about the fallout of it. We welcome on a real gentleman, although the last time he was on, he did attack me and I was hurt by it. You know him as a Sporting News national writer, longtime college football writer. He's got a great piece up right now for the Sporting News about the untold story of LeBron James' last high school football game. He is the always amazing, the scintillating Bill Bender on the Technicom Hotline. Bill, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
What's up, Bill?
We're always happy to have you. Great piece on LeBron stuff. I will always give you kudos for LeBron content, just so you know. We'll start on a very high-level question here. What does the carnage in college football from this weekend, Oregon getting spanked by Utah, the Michigan State getting spanked by Ohio State, what does all the carnage we saw in college football mean for the playoffs?
There's eight teams left that can make it. And it's a funny, and they're paired interesting. So Georgia, Alabama, and they play. Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and they play. Michigan and Ohio State, and they play. And then Notre Dame and Cincinnati, who have already played. I think you're going to find your four teams out of that group of eight. How they shuffle around will be decided mostly on the field. And now there's this sentiment building. What do you guys think about a one-loss Notre Dame maybe trying to take the back door into the playoffs?
Yeah, you stole my thunder right there. I was coming to you with Notre Dame, and I'm sitting there looking at Notre Dame at Stanford this weekend. I'm looking at them like, Notre Dame may make a push. Here's the question I ask you. If Notre Dame runs the next 2 weeks and they win out, what is that? That would be a 12-1 Notre Dame, if I'm correct, if they were to win out, versus an undefeated.
Well, they don't play that conference title game.
So right. 11-1.
They would be, okay, so let's say they're 11-1, and it's versus an undefeated Cincinnati. Do you think the committee would put a one-loss Notre Dame, who lost to Cincinnati because of their strength of schedule, in the playoff over Cincinnati?
They shouldn't, but I can't rule anything out. I mean, Cincinnati at that point, well, they've been 13-0. They looked good against SMU. They beat Notre Dame at Notre Dame by double digits, and they get Houston here in a week, which that's going to be a fun game, especially if Houston's at 11-1. So I think what's going to end up hurting Notre Dame at the end is not playing in that conference championship. Maybe they can apply for late ballot ACC membership and play Pitt or wait in the ACC championship game. But absent of that happening, you know, if somebody asked me, why is Notre Dame still in the conversation? And I had, you know, a quick response. But, well, because they wear gold helmets and they make a lot of money, and that's why they're probably still around.
Bill Bender, Sporting News national writer, here with Nick and Stan. It is a Panther Monday, but we are reacting to the weekend in college football. A lot was made out of Alabama eking past number 21 Arkansas. So I'll ask you this. In the number one tier of college football teams in college football, how many teams are they and who are they?
I think Georgia's one, and they've earned that. And Georgia, if they beat Georgia Tech, which they will, they're going to basically clinch a playoff spot, which is crazy to think that they could lose the SEC championship game and still get in, but I think that will happen. The only Power 5 team that would go undefeated. I think your next tier is Ohio State and Alabama. I would actually like to see Ohio State, Alabama on the field right now. I think it'd be a fantastic game, but hard to argue with what, like you said, Ohio State put on a 7-on-7 clinic Saturday. They could have been doing that on air, and I don't know if they would have done it better. And then it gets into Michigan, Oklahoma State, Cincinnati, and can they win themselves in? And Oklahoma State's really the only one that needs a little bit of help. And then you got Oklahoma and Notre Dame still trying to make that late push. That's kind of how I see the board. Feel free to tell me what I missed.
We always do.
Bill, did the outcome of Saturday's Wake Forest-Clemson upset surprise you?
The margin did. Not the victory. I mean, Clemson's built that reputation off so many home victories. They've got more talent from a 4- and 5-star perspective than Wake Forest does. I thought it'd be closer. But for Clemson to do that, it's just a reminder that if you really want to take that next step as an ACC championship team, you've got to beat them at home. And I think they could run that streak up to, I kind of looked, so the record's 58. Miami from the 80s, the U and all that. And you start to wonder, I mean, looking at their schedule next year, could Clemson really make a serious push to win 50 or so straight home games? And that was their big test this year. And, you know, for Wake, they can still, like Sam Hartman said, they can still get to Charlotte, and they've got to take care of their business this week.
Bill Bender, the Sporting News national writer, with Nick and Stan here talking the latest in college football. Dave Clawson, a Wake Forest head coach, has been named in a lot of speculative reports about other jobs around college football. Do you think it makes sense for him to leave this year? And if where is there a place that makes most sense to you for Dave Clawson if he should leave?
I mean, there are some interesting openings. I mean, Florida might take a look. You know, anywhere else in the ACC. I mean, I know there was Virginia Tech talk, but I mean, he's doing what he could do at Virginia Tech at this point. So I think it's been a remarkable rebuild at Wake Forest. He's taken a page from, you know, Jim Grobe did a great job there, and now Dave Clawson. And I think it's really hard to win big there. And those two guys have found a way. And if Dave Clawson can win an ACC championship, that would be an amazing accomplishment. And then he'll get, you know, looks from the bigger schools. And I think it's coming. So that will be his value decision to see if he wants to continue for John or take one of these many enticing Power 5 openings. Because, Nick, as you know, I mean, there are more coming. We're already at 14.
Bill, I think about, and I'm looking around the landscape, right? And we haven't done this now. The Dan Mullen. Right. Nick and I are in agreement. We think that's a mistake. I can't help but look at the ACC and go, is this thing going to be at Miami? We know we already have Virginia Tech. Who else should be on alert within the ACC? Coaching wise.
Well, I mean, those are the ones that stick out. Dan Mullen, I think, would do a fantastic job at Virginia Tech. It could be very similar to what he was able to do at Mississippi State. Or they have big expectations at Virginia Tech. I understand that. But, you know, if you look at his work at Mississippi State, it was phenomenal. There was a point in time in the college football playoff era where Mississippi State was ranked number one and had Dak Prescott at quarterback. That's not too bad. You know, could he rekindle that at a place like Virginia Tech? Absolutely. Would he take the Miami job and look for revenge in that state? Maybe. Who knows? But I think Miami's another one that we're kind of eyeballing that you're prepared if it happens, so to speak. You know, with those coaching lists that we all do, I'll just say we're kind of prepared if that happens.
I've never rooted for Miami in my life. I'm rooting for Dan Mullen to take that job because I think the greatest troll job in history. One, I think he would be their best head coach outside of Mark Richt since Butch Davis, and I'm just lobbing bombs right now. And two, watching Florida Gators take some does it make sense to you? Because this idea that Billy Napier of Louisiana, who I like as a head coaching candidate, does it make sense to fire a guy with the best winning percentage since Urban Meyer? Actually, I think it's the best winning percentage of any Florida head coach, not named Spurrier or Meyer, for a guy who's never coached in the Power 5.
Crazy. And it's this one year bad. They had a very bad year. But it happens in college football. And, you know, I'll point toward Michigan. I don't think they're going to win Saturday, but you can't say that Jim Harbaugh didn't do a good job this year to get them back to 10 wins and competitive. And they did have a horrible year last year, but he made the right. I thought what would happen at Florida was they would take it out on the assistant. They would retool that coaching staff and kind of give Dan Mullen another year to figure it out, and they didn't. So, to your point, yeah, I mean, but this is these Florida schools – whether it's Miami, Florida, or Florida State, they're not the schools they were. And I think a big part of that, and I don't follow the recruiting that close, is Alabama, Clemson, Georgia. They're taking the Florida kids. Ohio State gets a lot of Florida kids. So they need to find a coach that can keep those kids home. It's not rocket science. If you keep all those 4- and 5-star kids in Florida, they're going to do well for those Florida schools.
Bill Bender of the Sporting News with Nick and Stan talking some college football here. We've talked a bit about Clemson Tiger football coming off their win over Wake Forest. If they win the regular season finale but don't make the ACC title game, and then they get to a bowl game, obviously. Let's say Clemson ends up as a 10-win team. Is that still a disappointment considering how bad things looked at one point this year?
No. No, not in a transition year where, again, I think I've said this on your show, when you have Taj Boyd, record setter, Deshaun Watson, transcendent college football talent, Trevor Lawrence, maybe the best arm I've ever seen from the press box, and then you go to a new quarterback, there's going to be some you know, some downplay. And they've had injuries, and they've weathered that. And I think 10 wins. And again, I think Saturday was a reminder that on some level they're still the team to beat. I know Pitt got them. I know NC State got them. And you go back to that Georgia game, in retrospect, you're thinking, well, that team actually hung with Georgia, and nobody's done that since. So I don't think the reports of Clemson's demise, I would say those are very exaggerated, and Dabo will have a pretty good team back next year.
Let's stay in the ACC, Bill. And, you know, obviously I had a rooting interest in the Pitt-Virginia game on Saturday. But I look at Pitt ranked 18th in the country. I'm assuming they're going to go up in the college football playoff show tomorrow. But for right now, I'm looking at them and I'm going, all right, they're probably going to win the Coastal at this point. I think that's a pretty much a lock. No wins versus an AP-ranked team for Pitt. What are we to think about Narduzzi, Kenny Pickett, this Pitt Panther team, right? Is this a legitimate ACC championship game contender? Is this the best the conference has to offer?
Well, Pickett's had a fantastic season. I think they've been a good story. I mean, the head-scratching loss to Western Michigan aside, it's been a wonderful year for Pat Narduzzi, and if they can build off that, I think if they can find a way to win the ACC championship, which I think they will, and then get to that New Year's Day Six Bowl, then we can start talking about it because they can use that experience against whoever they play, and it could be a Notre Dame or it could be one of the Big Ten teams that cycles out, that we'll get to see it. And I think that will be fun to watch Pitt in that stage. And Kenny Pickett deserves everything that he's got this year. He's had a fantastic season.
Follow this man on the Twitter machine at BillBender92. And also, check out his latest for the sporting news, The Untold Story of LeBron James' Last High School Football Game. Bill, you're the best, my guy. Really do appreciate your time.
Hey, no problem. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
All right,
Thank you so much. Bill Bender. You're a good man.
He's a nice dude.
Very, very nice dude. Got to know him a bit in Cleveland. I'm finally going to give you your flowers, Stan.
About what?
About 10 games ago, you said the ACC was going to suck. Boy, howdy, does the ACC suck. It is just stink on crap. But you know what? Wake Forest is still going to win it, and I'm going to stick by that.
Are you going to that game, Wake and Pitt, at Bank of America?
Yes, I will.
I'm not attending that game.
And I might wear a one-size-too-small Sam Hartman jersey.
If you get man-nip outside of a jersey in frigid temperatures, we're not friends
anymore. I'm going to have to cut the neck a little bit because, you know, I just have these shoulders that go on for days here.
I thought you were cutting it so you can get your full tip.
We've got a lot to get into in the rundown, but a sly move, not on Sports Radio FNC. Sports Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet here. It is a Panther Monday, and I'm going to burn a little prematurely here. I'm not a premature burner. All right, I think everybody knows I burn right when I'm supposed to for exactly as long as I'm supposed to burn.
No, you go overboard.
But let's talk about Joey Sly. Joey Sly is the Taylor Heineke of kickers. All right? He barely has a spot in the NFL. And I can't tell if this was from yesterday or meaning last night or this morning. Joey Sly has a picture of him kicking one of his field goals. Hey, you made him this time, Joey. Good for you.
Yeah, a long of 36
with
for him
the caption,
yeah.
I'm back by goma to this clown.
By goma to him.
Hey, Joey. You've completed 81% of your kicks in the NFL, which makes you better than any average person on the street at kicking field goals. But in the NFL, it means you're the pits. So instead of trying to troll the organization that cuts you because you were a slappy, maybe just focus on yourself. Maybe take up some Buddhism. Maybe go ahead and find your Zen, right? Feng shui the hell out of your house. Whatever you have to do. But don't troll the organization all because you suddenly decided to start making field goals. By goma to Joey Sly. Somebody had to say it. By goma.
I'm glad you got that off your chest.
He got cut by the Houston Texans this year. Come on.
I just saw the posting from Pro Football Focus. Speaking of Joey Sly being the Taylor Heineke of kickers. Taylor Heineke, highest graded quarterback by Pro Football Focus in week 11.
I'm done with that.
88.
Ever since the week that Sam got benched, that Sam was graded as the highest graded Pro Football Focus quarterback,
week, yeah.
I'm done. I will never, I'm, this is a solemn promise to you, Fleet,
pull this,
to Itty Bitty Fitty,
pull this.
And to God and the people of Carolina.
Pull this, to your family? Are you pulling never, your family?
No, they don't. Keep them out of this. You know what? Promising the family, too. I will never reference Pro Football Focus grades
that's
as a means
that's a
of supporting my argument.
That's a lie.
You know why? Because yeah. They're bleep clowns. That's what they are.
Taylor Heinicke, highest rated QB.
Sam Darnold gets benched, and you guys are like, best quarterback in the NFL this week. Because you don't watch actual NFL. That's the only conclusion. Man, I burned twice there. Let's get into the rundown here. The Panthers had their fair share of mistakes that allowed them to lose to Washington yesterday. As easy as it is to jump on the coaching, Panthers cornerback Stephon Gilmore said they were all self-inflicted wounds.
It was all self-inflicted. It's the things we didn't do well that coming into this game we knew we had to do well to win. And, you know, it was our fault. You know, we just got to watch the film and learn from it.
Yeah. Stephon Gilmore. The penalty that really stands out to me is late in the fourth quarter, Washington was attempting a field goal and Dante Jackson jumped off sides.
Yeah.
And it shortened, I think it was 4th and 7, and the 5-yard penalty made it 4th and 2 and shortened the field goal opportunity. Now, who knows, you know, how much that actually impacted the kick, but it was the one that stood out, like, Dante, you in this moment, a veteran, like, no, nah, and Dante didn't have a great day yesterday. But, yeah, I agree with Stephon Gilmore. The wounds were self-inflicted, but some of that is also Washington. They had their way with you in the running game.
It was Shaq Thompson not filling the gaps the way we've seen him at other points this year. It was Derrick Brown and Daquan Jones getting bounced and moved around.
Brian Burns not setting the edge.
Just blown off the side of the edge there. Again, I'll throw out this stat about the defense. Every time they've allowed opposing teams to rush for 30 or more times, they're 0-5. When they keep opposing teams under 30 touches, they're 5-2. Or sorry, 5-1. There's a you know what's killing you. So who's gonna fix it? Phil, you're old as hell. Please fix it. So we can get back to winning.
I passed Phil Snow in the press box. He was in between the third and fourth quarter.
Uh-huh.
He was on the way to the restroom. He looked at me. He sized me up like, can I get some snaps out of you? I was like, nah.
He also have just been looking if you had an answer.
Please, you got something? I hear you every day on the show. You got something? Well, don't think for a second that Phil Snow doesn't listen to our podcast.
Will Pelagic, you got anything? McClain, Kunkel, you guys got anything? Huh? Anybody? Grace, you're new here, but you got anything?
Number two.
Also over the weekend, somebody's big Deke energy was compromised. Some might say deflated, as Clemson routed previously top 10 ranked Wake Forest, which led Clemson Tiger head coach Dabo Swinney to be impressed by the way his offense stepped up.
At the end of the day, it came down to offense today. And it, as good as our defense has been all year, they've been there all year, this was a day that the offense took it over, just flat took it over and just kept answering. I thought DJ led us well. He showed just so much toughness. He's obviously not 100%. He made some big plays, and, you know, the play by Bo was amazing.
I have been calling for Tony Elliott to run the ball more for eons now. Kobe Pace and Will Shipley combined for 43 carries and 300 yards carrying. Flowers to them, flowers to Tony, and I really wanted to say this again. Flowers to DJ Uiagalelei. The box score might not be the prettiest thing in the world.
He wasn't bad, 11-19.
Well, no, but it's 19 passes. It's not a lot to get excited about. No,
he did throw the pick.
But that kid played his heart out. Despite not being 100%. And every time, especially in college, like, I love standing for players who played through injuries because they deserve credit. You earned your paycheck and then some, even if the stat line doesn't look pretty. But when you're in college, in what is tantamount to a lost season for Clemson, because they're probably not going to go to the ACC title game. They're not going to be in the playoffs. Kudos to DJ Uiagalelei when he could have tapped out and put it on the guy's, his backup, whose name I really can't pronounce.
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce it either.
That's number
Number three.
That'll be you.
Carolina basketball went 0-2 over the weekend in a Final Four type event. The main issues for the Tar Heels early on has been their defense, which Hubert Davis says will improve.
From a defensive standpoint, it's not where I want to be. I'm very disappointed, but I'm not discouraged. Gives us an opportunity to really reflect and see what we're doing and the things that we need to change. And I guarantee things will change. I am convinced that not only we can be a good defensive team, I'm convinced that we can be a great defensive team, and it will change.
You know what? I'm going to punt on my response. Floundeezy. I'm Floundeezy. Itty bitty fitty. Get in here.
Same guy.
Stannis.
What's up with your basketball coach?
So here's my biggest thing, right? Like, Roy Williams was known for being stubborn, but when you win 903 games and you're one of the four best coaches in the history of the sport, you can be stubborn. Five games in, Hubert Davis has not shown a willingness to change anything. Like, when you're giving up 80 points or more to four straight opponents, two of them being group of five opponents that are going to be from one qualifying team in the NCAA tournament, that's a problem. And so I don't get how you can watch your team not defend four straight games. You've given up 60% or shooting in four of the last eight halves you've played, and you haven't changed anything. To me, that's a problem.
Change starting lineup. Leaky Black started.
Well, and look, Leaky Black's your best defender, which is, that's also a problem because he's not even all that great at defending. They've got a lot of issues. To me, the simple fix, put him in a zone. Because if you can't stay in front of the ball, you zone the ball.
I would like to point out, I do not treat the Purdue loss the same way as I treat the Tennessee loss. The Tennessee loss was incredibly frustrating because that game got way away from you in the second half in a way it should not have.
Especially given that Villanova smashed Tennessee.
The Purdue loss... That was just a bad matchup for you with the way – I mean, they've got a 7-4 guy, and you've got a bunch of bigs who like to be out on the perimeter. That game didn't bug me. The Tennessee loss was specifically how it got away, the lack of defense, not getting back in transition. That did bug me. I'll go that far.
Number four.
University of Florida fired head coach Dan Mullen yesterday in a surprising move. Despite the success of the Gators that they've experienced under him, Florida AD Scott Strickland said they felt like they needed to move on after waking up Sunday morning.
I'll be honest, probably this morning is when, you know, I made that decision that we were ready to go a different direction. So I don't know that it's, you know, I can't say it was 70% on this day and then 80% another day. Just, you know, Dan was our coach and I was fully supportive of him. But, you know, once you get that feeling, it's time to do something different. You know, you need to go ahead and do it. And I woke up this morning with that feeling and so we moved ahead.
What's most noteworthy is that Scott Strickland is the guy who was a big part of Dan Mullen's success at Mississippi State. And there's also been whispers about whether Dan Mullen really likes recruiting the way you have to recruit anymore. I cannot get over the fact that Dan Mullen has the third best winning percentage of any Florida Gators head coach. This isn't Ron Zook 2.0. This isn't Jim McElwain humping sharks.
Like, that was not him.
Okay. That's what everybody would say.
That was an alleged video.
Yeah.
It was grainy.
Uh-huh.
And we haven't asked the shark. So we don't know if that truly was McElwain on his back.
I'm just going to tell you, the shark can't speak for himself. Thank you very much. But I think Dan Mullen is a really good football coach.
He's an excellent coach.
Is he Nick Saban?
No,
there's one guy like that.
Yeah.
Is he Ryan Day? I don't know. But what I can tell you is I really do hope for this because I don't give a bleep about Miami. I hope Dan Mullen goes down to Miami and continues what he's done. And he shoves Miami Hurricane football up the Florida Gators. It is so much, I don't think Florida Gators fans understand this. It is so much easier to level down by Dan Mullins multiple times than it is to level up off of him.
Agreed.
This is a tricky spot for Florida.
Bill Bender, the Sporting News, joined us in a previous segment. He said Dan Mullen should be the apple of the eye of Virginia Tech.
I think that's
an interesting hire.
Dan Mullen is the best head coach available right now.
Oh, no doubt about that. Yeah, no doubt about that.
I would rather Dan Mullen take over my school than James Franklin.
Agreed.
God bless James Franklin.
I love Frank for what he is, but nah.
All right, guys, that is the rundown. It is a Panther Monday, and we've got to talk about Cam Newton moving forward next on Sports Radio FNC.